Welcome back to Take On. Today we're doing Q&A. These are my favorite podcast episodes to listen to because I feel like you get a little bit of everything and they tend to be kind of short and snappy listens. So I asked for questions across a few platforms and I'm going to just jump right into them. The first question is, what's something you did just to look legit when you were first starting? And I'll answer this specifically about first starting Oko. I feel like I have one that's more of a tangible takeaway and one that's more just funny looking back. The funny looking back one is that we had an email, an accounting at Oko strategy email, where if we were having an issue getting payment from a client, we would email them from that email as if it was our accounting team, but it was actually just us. And, honestly, though, even though it makes me laugh looking back at that, I don't regret it because I do think that it created some separation and allowed us to be stern in making sure that we received our payments in a timely manner, but also allowed us to leave that tension outside of the personal relationship with the client. And a more tangible tip is that when we were first starting Oko, of course, it was hard to have that credibility as an agency when we barely had any clients on our roster. And something that we did was that we offered pro bono social media strategy guides to a few clients, and we were very intentional about who we took on for this. We tried to go bigger and more recognizable with each one that we did, and we really capped it at a low number. I think we did less than five to also ensure that we were not getting a reputation of doing all of this pro bono work. But it really helped us gain momentum and credibility when we were reaching out to clients and they could see that we had a few recognizable names on our roster and testimonials from those clients. So that's something that I would definitely recommend if you have a service-based business and you're just getting started. The next question is something you wish you knew before starting your business. And I purposefully did not think about any of these in advance. I'm just kind of answering on the fly because I feel like sometimes that's the best answers instead of overthinking them. But I would say for this one, what comes to mind is launching fast and adjusting and being scrappy. I feel like everyone says that, but it's one of those things that's hard to take to heart with your first business because you feel that it can be quite tied to your identity. And as a perfectionist and an overachiever, I really wanted anything I put into the world to reflect the care I have in what I'm doing. But now I recognize that you can have a lot of care about what you're doing and still put it out there before it's beautiful and perfect to test the waters and see if people are truly interested in this before you invest capital into it. For example, with my first business, Freemint, that I had before Oko, it was a clothing rental platform, so a marketplace. And I raised a friends and family round and I invested heavily into branding, website development, photo shoots, legal structure, accounting structure, et cetera. And now, with us building Oko Approved, which is also a marketplace, we're doing it so scrappy. We're spending less than $1,000 on the beta version of the platform. And then once we see that there truly is traction with this idea, then we'll invest and build out a more robust platform. The next question is, biggest lesson you had to learn the hard way in your career? I would say that there will inevitably, especially as an entrepreneur, be high highs and low lows, and that that's okay, and to be prepared on both ends. When you're having these low lows, I think about a few things now. I first think about if the low low is coming from a lack of clients. I think about taking that time to rest and rejuvenate. I feel like I used to take that time to really push it to the limit to get new clients. And not to say that's a bad thing, but for me now, I make sure I use it as an opportunity to rest for when we inevitably get really busy again. And as well, I recognize that these times don't last forever. And that you also have to recognize when it is stretching out too long and a pivot needs to be made with whatever issue you're having in your business. And then on the flip side, when things are really good, recognizing that that often sadly doesn't last forever, especially in a service-based business, you will have those inevitable dips and to be prepared both mentally and financially in those situations and not get too big of a head. because I have definitely had some big-headed moments. The next question is there anything you wish you'd done differently? I think that kind of ties back into the something I wish I knew before starting my first business about being scrappy, launching fast. I do, I guess, wish that I had done that differently, but at the same time, I feel like everything works out the way that it's meant to. So I wouldn't actually go back and change anything if I could. How do you keep a healthy relationship with your co-founder as you switch between personal and professional? So if you don't know, Devin and I, my co-founder, were friends for, I believe, 5 years before we officially started Oko. And I think that this relationship as co-founders has come quite naturally. I feel that we really tested the waters without even realizing that that's what we were doing before we incorporated a business together. We would often go on really long walks as friends, and we would be discussing the challenges that we were having in our lives and how the other would recommend navigating those challenges, and found that we were always on the same page and could very easily take each other's advice, feel like we'd give ourselves the same advice, and that we just viewed problems and challenges in a really similar way and viewed life and our values in a similar way as well. So all of that, I think, has helped to have a healthy relationship from the beginning. But when it comes to switching between personal and professional specifically, it's a pretty natural approach. Like, I feel like it just came about naturally, but I do notice that we are clear on when it's time to, you know, be friends and when it's time to get down to work. I think part of that comes down to scheduling. So we schedule our work time very specifically in terms of collaboration time. And we also schedule things like, let's say we're scheduling a dinner reservation for the two of us. I feel like we'll be pretty clear on if this is a work dinner or a personal dinner, and as such, what we would be talking about during dinner. But I think really having those boundaries, I feel like something that I hear about with people who work with their partner or a close friend is that sometimes it becomes work all of the time and it feels impossible to shut it off. So I think that having some distinction where, you know, it's just a simple conversation of like, well, I want to, you know, get your advice as a friend and things like that. But honestly, I think that we've been really lucky that it comes quite naturally to us. Next one is how to build a personal brand when you're still figuring out your business and yourself, LOL. I have definitely struggled with this. I feel like I really waited to build my personal brand, both in lack of time, I would say, but also in lack of confidence in the direction that I wanted my personal brand to go. But it's funny because what we would advise a client is that people want to see the journey, not just the end result. So share you figuring out your business and yourself. That's the kind of things that people actually want to see. They'll resonate with it. They'll want to go on your journey with you, as opposed to, you know, here I am in this big life and no one has any context as to you as a person or how you got there is a lot less intriguing to people. So I actually think that when you're still figuring out your business and yourself is the perfect time to build a personal brand. So I think just share the process and also have some forms of consistency, whether that is, you know, the typical type of setting that you're filming your videos, some sort of series, something where people can really recognize that that's you and your personal brand, even though you're still figuring some things out. The next one is, how do I figure out what my lane is? How much should be based on what I'm good at versus what people want? I think that sometimes these questions can be tricky because it's so different for different people. I would say that I come across some people who want to have their work be strictly for financial gain so that they can enjoy their life outside of the office. And some people want to dedicate their life to their passion. And I think there are pros and cons to both, because sometimes you can destroy your passion by making it become so serious. When I was figuring out what I wanted to do during university, I did this quiz where you ask a number of people in your life that are in your life for various reasons. So family member, a friend, a boss, a professor, etc. And you ask them to describe you in 5 adjectives. And I found this to be really helpful because I would see a lot of common threads of everyone or almost everyone on the list describing me in certain similar ways. And that enabled me to recognize what people want from me. I think social media is also great for this. You see these analytics and metrics on what people want from you, and you can get a sense there. And then figuring out what you're good at and what you enjoy is also really important. I feel that there's a lot of personality tests, human design, et cetera, where you can get a sense of what you're innately good at. And then, of course, you know for yourself. Also consider what you're passionate about. And then I would try to find something that really blends all of those things together, or choose which aspects you want to dedicate your work to and how you can still foster those other things outside of work. How do you deal with imposter syndrome? Thankfully, I feel that this is not something I actually think about very much anymore. I feel more confident in myself even when I know that I'm not the smartest person in the room or the most accomplished. I don't get that imposter feeling anymore. But when I did have that, I would say that, to be honest, what helped was just getting more experience and getting more knowledge. So when I was facing situations where I had imposter syndrome, I would really amp up how much I'm learning in my free time and refining aspects of myself that made me have that imposter syndrome feeling. Whenever I'd get that feeling in a situation, I would kind of make a mental note. And when I got home or whenever I had time, I would consider what exactly was making me have imposter syndrome in that situation, because in different situations, it'd be really different. Sometimes it would be something as silly as my outfit. Other times it would be feeling like my vocabulary wasn't strong enough for the room I was in, or something more tied to my career, like feeling that I didn't have a strong enough idea of what a marketing plan should be for this client. And anytime I'd face those challenges, I would look to just really fix those things within myself, because it is pointing to areas for improvement. And so I would really just try to improve those. And the more I did that, the more confident I became. So I think that having a very analytical approach to imposter syndrome is what worked for me. I'm sure that other people might have more therapeutic advice, but honestly, that's just what worked for me. And that brings us to the end of all of the questions. So I will see you on next week's episode.